Support for WMNF comes from our members and the Polk Museum of Art, presenting Mid-Florida Mayfair by the lake Saturday, May 7th and Sunday, May 8th. On the shores of Lake Morton in downtown Lakeland, this art festival features more than 185 artists, entertainment, food vendors, and kids' activities. More at PolkMuseumOfArt.org. Hey, if you're wondering what happened to Alan Watts, he's now in WMNF HD3, The Source. Tuesdays at 10 a.m., you can hear all our news and public affairs station on an HD radio or on WMNF.org. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'm really delighted to be bringing you another edition of Talking Animals, in which we'll be speaking about behavioral issues with dogs, cats, and other animals, and how to address those issues with animal behaviorist Wendy Kelly. First, though, as always, we're kicking off the show with an animal tune selected with today's conversation in mind. This is John Hyatt's My Dog and Me, here on Talking Animals. That was John Hyatt with My Dog and Me, an animal song, an ode to the simple pleasures. Excellent. No problem. All right. See? I told everybody before this was going to happen. There'd be screw-ups, and here they are. So no problem. Luckily, there's no staff meeting today, so everybody can hear. Excellent. All right, so that was John Hyatt. And, of course, the headphones are cutting in and out here, so that raises the bar as well. Anyways, My Dog and Me, an animal song, an ode to the simple pleasures of a canine companion and to ease us into today's edition of Talking Animals. My name's Duncan Strauss, here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with today's guest, Wendy Kelly, an animal behaviorist who's the founder and owner of Pet Peeves Animal Training, Inc., based in Clearwater, Florida. Pet Peeves offers an array of programs and services for dogs, cats, birds, and horses. We'll find out about Wendy's work, including the money-back written guarantee she offers. And partly frame the conversation with a case study involving a boxer client named Barksdale. When we speak of Wendy Kelly in a few moments here on Talking Animals, and as usual, we'll also welcome your questions and comments at 813-239-9663 or by email at dj@wmnf.org. Just going to turn up this music for a second, see if I can switch headphones. Excuse me one sec. Okay, I'm back. It's all good. I'm just using different headphones. You can barely tell from there, probably, right? Okay. So, also a bit later in the show, we'll step into the comedy corner. We'll play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will receive a pair of tickets to see Sleigh Bells with CSS this Friday, April 29th at the State Theater in St. Petersburg. And we'll speak with Linda Orr, a founder of Countless Cats Rescue, who is holding a yard sale fundraiser in Brandon this Saturday. Right now, it's time for animal news and announcements. Look at items of interest in animal news, locally, regionally, nationally, sometimes internationally, as well as announcements of local events. So, let's turn now to interesting and or notable developments in animal news. We also welcome your comments, which you can share on the air instantly by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org. So, let's talk turkey, as it were. Produced by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department, our first item actually is about Talking Animals World. Just want to say a couple things. I purposely avoided last week talking about the Talking Animals Festival, too. I thought everybody could use a break from a reference to that. I certainly could. So, but I do want to thank everybody who helped, everybody who participated, everybody who attended, everybody who had any other involvement. It was, I think, by most accounts, a huge success. Everybody seemed to have a great time, humans, animals included. So, thank you, thank you, thank you. And also, probably part of the reason I was eager just to do a regular show last week is we were preempted kind of effectively the last 2 weeks with the fund drive. So we're back on track, obviously. We could still kind of use some support. I'll get back to that in a sec. But, again, people did really support Talking Animals on April 6th, our fund drive show. Really, really want to thank everyone who chipped in any way. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And meanwhile, if you didn't have a chance to support the station or Talking Animals during that time, you can go to the Talking Animals tip jar. Just go to WNF.org, find Talking Animals on the schedule. If you want to slip a couple bucks in the tip jar, that'd be swell. We'd appreciate it. Thank you. All right, on to news and announcements. This one's kind of been making the rounds. I took this particularly from the LA Times blog of April 25th. The creators of a dogfighting phone application that has been assailed by animal protection groups and police officials said Monday the game was meant to educate the public on the evils of animal cruelty. In an email to the Times signed by Pit Boss at CageGames.com, an official for Cage Games said proceeds from the game would benefit animal rescue organizations and the Japanese tsunami relief effort. The official did not give his real name, citing threats of violence by animal rights activists, and said critics, quote, are entirely missing the point. Quote, we are in fact animal lovers ourselves, the email said. This is our groundbreaking way to raise money / awareness to aid real dogs in need, execute freedom of expression, and serve as a demonstration to the competing platform that will allow us to, as developers, to release software without prejudgment. The president of the Los Angeles Police Protective League, Paul M. Weber, said he was unswayed by the company's defense and believes the game should be taken off the market and the creators fired. Weber called the game absolutely sickening and said it was absolutely the wrong message to send to our children. Back locally here in Tampa, a reminder that tonight the Hillsborough County Animal Advisory Committee meeting will be held in the Tall Pink County Building, second floor in downtown Tampa. Parking is free after 6 p.m. and the metered space is north of Kennedy Boulevard. Please attend this meeting and be the voice for those who cannot speak for themselves. I think the meeting time is indicated here, but almost all these are at 6:30 p.m., so hopefully you can get over to that and speak on behalf of those animals. You can't do as much of the talking animal stuff as we would like. Also coming up locally, Sunday, May 1st, Florida Voices for Animals annual Have a Heart fundraising dinner and silent auction will be held at Trang Viet Cuisine, 4:30 to 8 p.m. And the guest speaker will be Amy Joy Lanoue, Ph.D., Associate Professor of Health and Wellness at the University of North Carolina, Asheville. Her presentation will be, Should Dairy Products Be Part of a Healthy Diet? You can find out more about the evening, including what it costs to get in, by going to floridavoicesforanimals.org. And editing on the fly, here's something cool that's kind of coming up and going to be a month-long thing that our good friends over at Animal Coalition of Tampa are doing. It's the first annual Kids for Paws contest. Kids 6 to 13 years old can create a free fundraising page. You can go to Animal Coalition for Tampa's website, actampa.org, and find where you can register online. Then you send the page to all of your family and friends and ask them to sponsor you through donations. And there's cool prizes that will be given. And then there'll be a big awards event June 4th at Seaplane Basin Park in Davis Island. Dogs on Leashes will be welcome. And they'll have vendors, a bounce house, of course, hot dogs, etc. So anyways, find out more by calling Jennifer at ACT at 813-335-3778. Or again, go to actampa.org. All right, I think that's going to do it for this edition of the Animal News and Announcements. Let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner. All right, it's just the way things are going. That's okay. We're just rolling with it, right? We're just rolling with it. Okay, so let's hear something from Mitch Hebrick. We always do a shorter piece when we have an in-studio guest, and today we have two guests. More about that in a second. But this is Mitch Hebrick with a piece called Headless Horseman on Comedy Corner on today's Talking Animals.
If I was a headless horseman's horse, I would f*** with that dude. Yeah, we're going that way. We're not headed towards the hay. Imagine if the headless horseman had a headless horse. That would be chaos. We need a head. Now, is a hippopotamus, or a really cool apotamus? I'm sick of seeing squirrels on water skis. You better get off the water sports, dude. Winter is approaching.
That was the late, great hit Mitch Hedberg with a piece called Headless Horseman, taken from his album Do You Believe in Gosh? I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net. It's nearly time to speak with today's guest, Wendy Kelly. As I mentioned earlier in the show, Winnie's an animal behaviorist who's the founder and owner of Pet Peeves Animal Training, Inc., which is based down the road a piece in Clearwater, Florida. And pretty clearly, Wendy is at the center of this operation. And something of a singular attribute, she commits to the intended results in writing with a money-back guarantee. And seeking to provide specifics in this conversation while discussing a process that can sometimes sound a bit intangible, if not magical, will include a case study involving a once challenging, very fearful boxer client named Barksdale, courtesy of one of her humans, Margaret. More on that later. Meanwhile, with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome Wendy Kelly to Talking Animals. Wendy, hello.
Hello, Duncan.
Thanks for joining us in Talking Animals today. It's so exciting. Again, we all too rarely have our guests in studio, so it's always a big day for me.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Thanks. So we're going to spend most of our time here talking about the work you do with animals and the results that you achieve. But first, maybe you could sort of briefly outline the path that led you to this work as an animal behaviorist, including the time you spent as kind of more of a human behaviorist.
Yeah, I started out as a psychological therapist working with people, kids, families, and making a difference in that direction. And I incorporated animals into my practice, and I learned something by doing that people got better quicker. And there's something intangible with animals. And it, actually, there's some tangible parts that we identify that help people become the best versions of themselves. And so from then, and I got further and further into animals and studied and opened a business, Pet Peeves Animal Training. And I work with dogs, cats, horses, and birds. And I'm really more of a translator between the two species, and just to share and help people grow.
And so once your focus became working with animals and you opened Pet Peeves, did you start to see kind of certain issues, like patterns of issues, or just certain issues more frequently than others over time?
Yeah, absolutely. I saw aggression cases, thunderstorm phobia, people really not knowing what to do or where to go next to resolve the problem. So I could help them with that in that direction.
And are there certain kind of say umbrella issues under which a lot of other kind of sub issues fall, like certain just sort of categories that you know, there might be a specific thing that's particular to that animal, but the certain fear things or certain other things that then you just sort of have to zero in on what that particular animal is experiencing within that overall issue?
Yeah, I think with every animal it's a little different. There's no really blanket problem for any specific breed or animal species. You part of assessing or working with animals and their humans is to accurately determine why the behavior is happening and what the steps are to get everyone to that point where it feels okay.
So all right. Well, so let's talk about then how that works, how the assessment works, because it sounds like that's kind of the pivotal first step. Is that process itself largely the same from animal to animal, or is it more specifically dictated by what their human or humans have reported as the chief reason that they're contacting you to begin with?
Mm-hmm. It could be a little bit of both. Sometimes what we think as humans is the problem really isn't quite the problem at all. So it's a matter of playing detective a little bit, observing, listening, looking at the overall dynamics between a pet and its parent. I work from a systems perspective, so you can't really separate out, in my opinion, the behavior, the organism, from the environment. They both have a play on each other.
So that's I guess what the systems approach means, is that it's all like how those humans and how that animal are interacting, and it's not just one or the other.
Exactly. Okay. And it's a pivotal. It's the main foundation, I think, that creates lasting change is the relationship. Is one of the most important elements of a good foundation for any kind of training, any kind of learning, is that trust and rapport.
Sure. And so in that case, does the assessment then vary a lot? Like, are some instantaneous and some kind of much more involved and lengthy in terms of really kind of determining what's going on within that relationship and that dynamic?
It runs about 60 minutes normally, 50, 60 minutes, where I get a detailed case history. When did the problem start? Is it outside of the range of normal behavior for this particular breed or age of dog or cat or bird? What's been done to resolve the problem or attempted? How does everybody feel about that? And kind of what are the goals? And then from there, I kind of negotiate and translate. I listen, basically. I listen and put the pieces together, because behavior is really not, although it's problematic at times, it's a symptom of something else going on.
Okay. So first let me just let people know that might just be tuning in. If you did just tune in, this is Talking Animals. We're speaking with animal behaviorist Wendy Kelly, and we'll invite you to join the conversation in a moment or two by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org. Okay, so then does sort of the course of action that you determine is the right thing once you kind of get at what's really going on. Mm-hmm. Does that sort of correspond with, I mean, you say you give 50, 60 minutes for the assessment, but I'm going to guess that having done this a while and with obviously some great, effectiveness and success, that there's some assessments that very, within a few minutes, you probably think, I have a pretty good idea where this is going.
Right.
And so I guess I'm curious, is there a sort of a corresponding thing with how you respond to what those issues are? Like, can those things be sort of dealt with also promptly, or does that not necessarily kind of that correlation?
I guess the most accurate answer would be it depends. It depends on, are people ready to resolve the problem? What's the payoff for the animal and the person for keeping the problem? Because oftentimes there is one. And how do I go about getting them to make that next step? So I guess to answer your question, yes and no. It doesn't take me very long, but it doesn't matter if I understand it. It
right.
matters, can I help them all
sure.
understand it
right.
and be on the same page?
And you raised an interesting point of what the motivation is. My guess is that if a human has contacted you and said, oh, my God, we're at wit's end,
yeah.
they're very motivated.
Yeah.
But the animal may or may not feel the same way. It's
right.
like, you know,
right.
I'm enjoying the way things
Excellent.
Are.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I'm
dog.
Wreaking havoc and having
yeah.
a blast.
Dog
so,
might be,
yeah,
you know, that big couch chew toy was fantastic.
Sure.
Loved it.
Right. Yeah. Thanks for the shoes.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I figure we'll sort of circle back to some of these general aspects of what you do, but I think it might be really useful at this point in the conversation to bring in a case study kind of to provide some specifics and some insights. So also in the studio with us, we have Margaret Murray, one of the humans who shares her life and home with the aforementioned boxer named Barksdale. So now before we meet Margaret, in the interest of full disclosure, I should mention that Margaret used to actually work at WMF. I think she thought about 10 years or so ago. And that was years before I got her. She works for the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, whose founder, Dr. Neil Bernard, was a guest on Talking Animals in October. And Margaret and I are friends. And I recruited her to fill up sort of a pivotal role in the Talking Animals Festival. So now that we've protected the integrity of the show, we're out of time. I'm very sorry. But now let's welcome Margaret Murray. Hi, Margaret.
Hi, Duncan. How are you?
Good, good, good. So good. Tell us about Barksdale in the pre-Wendy era.
Well, Barksdale is 95-pound boxer, and he's 2.5 years old now. We rescued him from Baltimore, and we kind of backtracked, and we were his fourth owner in the first 6 months of his life. And he was just a mess. He wouldn't walk past stop signs. He wouldn't, if wind was blowing, he wouldn't walk under trees. He wreaked all kinds of havoc at dog parks, and I actually probably shouldn't even be talking about some of the issues we have at dog parks with him.
Oh, really? Are there lawsuits pending?
Yeah. There could be.
Well, let me ask just before you go too much further, because, I mean, if there were four owners before you guys got to him, I mean, was there a red flag there, or was it just like there was enough mitigating circumstances where you think, okay, well, this might be a little bit of a troublesome canine?
You know, he was so cute when I first saw him that I just thought, oh, I love him. Oh my God. It's how can a dog weigh 75 pounds at 6 months old? This is crazy. And I was just so
He weighed 75 pounds at 6 months
yeah,
old?
Uh-huh.
Oh my goodness. And he's 75 pounds now?
He's 95.
Oh, he's 95.
Now.
Sorry. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought I missed something there.
Yeah.
Sorry. Okay.
He's a pretty big dog.
Yeah.
But he was just so cute and adorable that I didn't have much experience. I grew up on a farm and around animals, but I'd never had a dog in the city before.
Okay.
And I thought it was pretty much like when I grew up on the farm. You got a dog, you taught them where the food bowl was, and you let them run free. And that's not really the case.
So you were in Baltimore at the time, and somewhere along the line you moved back to St. Pete, I guess
right.
is actually the case.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then what was going on with Barksdale and you and?
Well, we had worked with a trainer before who taught him obedience, you know, sit, stay, and he was a really quick learner, but there were so many aggression issues, and we were just getting to the point we couldn't take him out of the house. We had to walk him in the middle of the night when we were sure no other dogs were around. He loves the water. We couldn't take him to the beach. You know, we were all just so stressed, and we were all kind of held hostage, and I could just tell that it wasn't going to end well. I couldn't imagine his life for the next 10 years and our life for the next 10
right.
years. So our first trainer, when she couldn't work with him anymore, she had suggested, well, you need a behaviorist, and that was the first time I'd ever heard of that.
And when you say couldn't work with him anymore, do you mean like out of exasperation or?
She came from a show dog background.
Okay.
So she taught him how to walk and sit, stay, come, all that, but she couldn't.
He looked great, but he was still getting into bar fights and
yeah,
stuff, right?
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay, I gotcha. Yeah. All right, so she recommended a behaviorist, first time he'd really heard that, and
mm-hmm.
then that obviously sent you on the path path to Wendy.
To finding Wendy. And one of the key things that our first trainer had said is that he, Barksdale, wanted nothing more than to please us. That's all he wanted to do. He's just like a big bundle of love. And so I was looking for someone who would have that positive aspect. So, because he doesn't do well with corrections, you know, he'll pull on a choke chain until his neck bleeds. So, I mean, those things just didn't work with him. So when I talked to Wendy, it just seemed like a perfect fit, someone who would be able to kind of help him over his fearfulness and do it in a way that would make all of us, like you said, be on the same page and work together as a team.
So, okay, so Wendy then, so when you first met Barksdale, if you could maybe just sort of shrink down how the assessment kind of seemed to you, what emerged from that assessment to you? What was your take on Barksdale?
My take on Barksdale was that he had learned some significant things early on. He'd been through four homes. He learned not really to be able to count on a consistent environment, a trusting environment. And being trained with a choke chain or a correction-based training techniques, he learned that you can't even trust the trainer either. And we know working and using that sort of methods, using punishment, is never a good option. Not only is it outdated, archaic, it's unkind, but it doesn't teach the dog the right behavior, and in fact, it exasperates the fear behavior.
So then your thing was like, okay, well, this dog is you know, been through the mill, and all his experiences are sort of negative, or he's on edge.
He's so on edge. So and what? He's been trained. I believe training is a dance. It's not a march. We've got to come to an agreement that we're going to do something together, and that doesn't happen overnight. And it's a joint effort from the four-legged to the two-legged animals. What we're going to do and how we get there.
Although I have to say that based on knowing a little bit about the situation from Margaret, it didn't happen overnight. But certainly, from what I remember her telling me, is that she dropped Barks, I guess, presumably after the assessment, she dropped Barksdale off, and I guess 7 days later, like, basically picked up a pretty entirely new version of Barksdale.
Yeah. Well, so a lot of changes happen early on. It seems the more extreme the behavior is outside of normal range, you see a dramatic improvement. On a short term.
Sure.
And it from a systems perspective, it obviously, you know, going through it with Barksdale, it's stressful for you. So to allow Barksdale to work out and be able to rely and be confident on his own and learn to trust and set up an environment that he wasn't worried about the pack, his pack back home, or worried about your, you know, fear response, it allowed him to learn freely.
And here's so given that his issues, or a lot of them, were kind of rooted in bouncing from one home to the next, how do you think it worked, and how did you approach the fact that he was sort of being dropped off with you for those 7 days, which to him might have started to seem like day two or three, like, seriously? It's happening again? I'm living somewhere else again?
Yeah. That's a good observation. Dogs look at it a little bit differently. It's not just the bouncing from home to home or the being dropped off. It's what happens in the context of when you're there. What was that last impression or association? When we had Barksdale, he learned that the environment would always be positive, it would always be predictable, and he would be rewarded for taking a confident step and a calm step towards the very dogs that he had attacked, a month prior? So it was unlearning. Behaviors that are learned can be unlearned and relearned. So it was a different experience, because he wasn't being, most of the time when you see a dog that's gone from home to home, he's been kind of kicked out or dropped off.
Right.
This is, hey, you're going to doggy summer camp, and you're going to learn, and you're going to come back with some new skills.
Okay.
So it makes a difference.
And so experience. So because they think differently than I did in making that observation, so for him, did he kind of, like, as far as you could tell, get that sort of right away, like, hey, this is going to be a cool experience. Yes, this isn't normally where you live, and you don't normally live with me, Wendy, but...
Yeah. Yeah, it took a couple days, honestly, because, again, trust doesn't come easily with a dog that has been learned not to trust.
Sure.
So it took a couple of days, and then he relaxed in. He, you know, the other shoe did drop. Everything was positive. Plus, we set up a way. There's certain behavioral principles that I follow, that all good behaviorists follow, to teach him something different.
That's
okay.
So when you got Barksdale back, what were the most pronounced differences that you observed?
Well, he was always such a nervous dog, and I had just become so used to him constantly being underfoot. He had to be within eyesight of one of us. You know, he was always right there. We could never leave the room without him following us. And I mean, he was just there. And we have a fenced-in backyard, and we usually leave the back door open. And I think it was maybe the next day that I got him home, or maybe the second day, and I realized that Barksdale wasn't sitting under my chair, and I was like, well, that's kind of weird. Maybe he's tired or something. And I walked through the house, and he was in the backyard laying in the sun by himself.
Wow.
And it sounds so crazy, but I started crying.
Yeah.
Because it was just, he had never had that confidence to just go and relax and be by himself.
Right, because he was always seeking assurance or reassurance, right,
exactly.
From one of you guys hey, everything's cool. So clearly he knew everything was cool. It could just be a dog.
Right.
Laying in the sun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was amazing.
Wow. So I've kind of maybe jumped a little bit out of order for what I meant to ask before. So what was, just because I am interested in this kind of written guarantee of results and the money back guarantee, I guess, actually. So what did you, after your assessment, and you obviously got a bead on him, what did you put in your sort of written, like, this is what we'll get to with Barksdale?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We contracted for Barksdale being able to pass by other dogs, being not so worried, not so frantic, and being more adjusted and happy, and basically having a good life, being obedient, well-mannered, not hurting anyone or hurting himself.
And okay, and that's clearly what you got,
yes.
And then some, probably.
Yeah.
So then, what happened when he returned and you had that cool experience where, hey, where's Barksdale? And he was out soaking up the sun. Are there ongoing sort of encounters between you and Barksdale,
yeah.
Wendy?
Yeah. Yeah, we're actually still in the process. We're getting close to finishing.
And is that sort of just reinforcing what happened in kind of that more intense 7 days, just to make sure he's kind of got – all those issues as squared away as they can be? Or
it's reinforcing, but really it's a two-part training. The first part was about Barksdale, about addressing his needs and fears and helping him learn a different way to cope with a stressful situation with other dogs without using the tool available to him, his teeth. And dogs will use what's available to them to get a grip on, if you will,
sure.
on the situation.
Sure, yeah.
So we helped him learn other tools outside of having to worry about that relationship. So part two of the in-home piece is actually to teach the two-legged animals. How are we going to foster this?
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to do next? And also teaching them how to think like a dog, how to think like a behaviorist, what to do and what not to do.
So let me get a little bit of a timeline then. So when you first met Barksdale and did that assessment, was when relative to the 7 day period with you, you and Barksdale, and then where we are now relative to where you think eventually maybe some of these, follow up, sessions might sort of then become less necessary.
Mm-hmm. We're probably, what'd you say, Margaret, eight sessions
yeah,
in home.
I think we've had about eight sessions.
So, but when did you first bring Barksdale to Wendy?
I think I brought him in maybe December,
okay.
And
yeah.
We did the assessment,
okay.
And then it was the holidays, so there
right.
was kind of a lull.
Okay.
January, actually, I'm looking at your clinical file. January.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So then.
So
we're about
3+ months in, probably. So far,
right.
And already pretty dramatic
yeah.
results. And so with this being at 3 months and with the kind of sessions you're talking about that are as much now human oriented as Barksdale oriented, what would you guess, that would be, you know, from the end of April where we are now to where you say, okay, all sides of the system are ready to rock on their own.
Yeah. Based on similar cases, I would say we'd be looking at 2 more months.
Okay.
Because we're at the point where prior to training, Barksdale couldn't even see another dog in a distance. Couldn't walk by another dog without lunging and biting and barking and carrying on. And now he can walk by calmly. So the next step would be to move up. We do a process of what's called systematic desensitization, where we take that very trigger and introduce it at a distance, move it up, and counter-condition it, pair it with something really positive. So Barksdale isn't reacting on a fight or flight or fear mechanism, but he's thinking through, oh, when that other dog's around, I benefit. He's learning something new. He's developing new tools.
And I can only assume that based on this systems approach and the very kind of methodical way that you've done this, that when you get to sort of the other end of the 2 months that you still think we're looking at here, that then there's little or no kind of chance for recurrence or sort of sliding back in any way because you've done this so carefully to get both Barksdale and the humans in the house to...
Right. I wouldn't say there's zero chance. I wouldn't say there's zero chance for anything to pop up like that. There's always circumstances outside of the norm.
Sure.
But under normal conditions and a regulated environment and consistent kind behavior within the scope of a sound philosophy, I would say it's minimal.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Absolutely.
Well, okay, so we're sort of just have a few minutes left and so, I guess to do what you do, it sounds like it's very important for you to meet the animal. And again, we should say, as I said, I think earlier, that it's not just dogs, it's cats, it's horses, it's birds. But if, you know, if we did get any listener calls or emails, we might quickly try to respond, depending on, I guess, the key thing is how specific they are
Absolutely.
In framing the question to you. So you really have something to sort of grab onto.
Happy to
so,
help.
All right. So if you do want to do that in our remaining time, again, my guest is the animal behaviorist, Wendy Kelly. Of Pet Peeves Animal Training. So if you have a question or comment for Wendy, it's 813-239-9663, or you can email that at dj@wmnf.org. And again, their website is petpeeves.info as opposed to .com or .net or whatever. So, all right. So now, while we're seeing if anyone does want to take us up on that, let me just ask you a little bit about our dog, Daisy. So she, is a very sweet dog that we adore, of course. And just one thing that's interesting that happens, especially each morning, is, but other times too, she barks at everybody and everything that walks by.
Mm-hmm.
So, a person, another dog, where we live happens to be sometimes horses.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume, is she just sort of protecting the territory, or?
It could be, dogs bark for many reasons. It's a natural canine behavior. But dogs are sequential thinkers. They think that whatever they did and whatever happened next, they sort of made happen. So if you have a person walking by and Daisy charges and barks and the person continues to walk by, she goes, wow, barking was really effective.
Oh, I got rid of that person.
I scared it out of territory.
Yeah, okay.
Look at that. That was great.
Yeah. Because she also, what I probably should have mentioned too, is she also frantically runs up and back. But I guess it's the same idea. It's like,
See,
if I chase them and I bark, we'll get these interlopers out of our area.
That's the same thing that happens with the male person that comes every day. They come, they actually leave scent inside territory, they come every day, the dog greets him, barks him, and scares him off every day. The dog gets to win every day.
Well, you know, enough about me because we do have some people calling and some emails, but I just want to quickly say that one thing that's interesting on the barking at the horses thing that I guess I'm just surprised at now is we temporarily have some horses living with us, which she doesn't bark at.
Hmm.
But I guess it's maybe just the fact these are now horses she doesn't know that she's still chasing off the land or whatever. Okay. All right. Well, let's take a question or two. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Wendy Kelly. Question for her? Hello?
Yes.
Hi, it's you.
Hi there.
Hi. A question for Wendy quickly, please.
Okay. Well, I my wife, in fact, is going to be going to Wendy, and after hearing this program, I'm so happy that she is. She has a great reputation out there. That's how we contacted her. I can't wait until the dog goes, but I have a problem with one of my dogs, 3-year-old green golden retriever, that keeps jumping on people when they come to the door.
Okay, you know what? So I'm just going to have her try to respond as best as I can, but I don't know if you're on a sort of bad area, but we just barely can make out what you're saying. So I'm just going to take as much of that and allow Winnie to respond if that's okay.
Great. Well, I appreciate you coming to see us, and I'm certain we can help you. Jumping is a very common behavior with canines. It's dogs greet other people just like they would greet another dog. And when you're greeting another dog, you jump on them, you jump up on them. So dogs don't automatically know what the right way or polite greeting is for a person in a pack. So I'm thrilled you're coming to see us, and we can certainly resolve that and teach your dog how to greet politely.
Okay, cool. Let's
thank you.
Let's see. We're sort of running short on time, but let's see if we can get at least one more in. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Wendy Kelly.
Hey, is Wendy Kelly there?
Yeah.
All right.
Hey, I'm disguising my voice.
Randy.
This is your worst nightmare, the master of disaster, a legend in my own mind, a macho man, Randy Savage.
Randy, how you doing?
What it is what it is. Bonafide superstar, Wendy Kelly. Yeah, that's the deal. How you doing, girl?
Randy, I'm good. I'm good. Randy actually is one of my clients.
Wow. All right. Well, there's a testimonial of sorts, I guess. Randy, I'm unless you seriously have a question, I'm going to scoot here, but thanks so much for calling in.
Wow, you're winding me up. What kind of a deal is this?
Well, thankfully you're on the phone. If you're here in person, I'd be much more solicitous, but we do have to run though. Thank you very much. Okay. So, again, we are in our, I'm sorry. We are at the end of it.
No problem.
But, anyway, so, again, this has been, Wendy Kelly. She's from Pet Peeves, Animal Training Inc. in Clearwater. You can find her information online at petpeeves.info. And I want to thank her for coming in. I want to thank Margaret
you.
For coming in and telling us the Barksdale story. And just quickly say that we did run out of time, but there's a cool thing that we'll cover another time, Positive Life Foundation, which I think quickly basically just trains animals to detect
cancer early.
Yeah, yeah. So that's cool. And she does have a book on a related note called Bougie, is that how you pronounce it?
Bougie and Me.
And Me. Seven Lessons from the Dog Who Rescued Me. So if you go to medallionpress.com and click on Wendy's name, again, it's Wendy Kelly, under authors, you could actually pre-order that book, and we'll have her back for a little chat in November when that book is officially out and available. So thank you very much, Wendy, for joining us today on Talking Animals. Thank you, Margaret. And I'm Duncan Strauss, and you're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to Name That Animal Tune. There'll be a prize, a pair of tickets to see Sleigh Bells and CSS at the State Theater in St. Pete this Friday. To the first person who calls in 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal tune. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals, and we'll be right back as well with Linda Orr from Countless Cats Rescue.
Rock and roll, 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 rock and roll
right. We'll,
hello.
Hi, we'll take any guesses on that in a moment off the air, but we do want to introduce now Linda Orr. She's a founder of Countless Cats Rescue. They're holding a yard sale fundraiser in Brandon this Saturday, so let's officially welcome Linda. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Duncan. Thank you.
Thanks for
having me on your wonderful program.
Thank you very much. Thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals. So let's just sort of jump right in. First of all, with the key question, what is Countless Cats Rescue, Inc.?
Well, we are an aggressive TNR organization, which is trap, neuter, and return, and we're trying to reduce the community cat overpopulation by TNR, which is the only humane method of way of reducing the population, humanely.
Sure.
And that's our main focus right there, is just helping these community cats.
Right. And so what communities or what areas are you primarily focused on in your efforts?
Well, we cover southwestern Pasco County, northern Pinellas County, and the upper Tampa Bay region.
Okay. And if I'm not mistaken, Countless Cats Rescue is not an actual shelter or a physical entity so much as a kind of, you know, coalition of folks that want to help with all the feral cats out and about in those areas.
Well, Countless Cats Rescue is faced with three individuals, which are our board members, myself and Denise Stone and Annalise Griffith, which are the founding members and the board members. And then we have a handful of volunteers. But most of the work is done privately in our homes, three of our homes. So we are not a shelter. We don't do public intake of animals. We do strictly trap, neuter, and return of these stray and feral cats that are in our community.
And you find that that's just kind of a more effective use of your resources, so you wouldn't necessarily anticipate at some point having an actual facility, because I gather that this gives you more funds and resources to do the work that you're really focused on doing.
Well, when you're working focusly mainly with TNR, we don't really need a facility, but we do have our homes, which we do have any of the cats that we are trying to put up for adoption. We foster them in our homes.
Right.
And we all have within our homes areas dedicated just for handling the cats that we do intake.
Sure.
Because when we're out there in the streets doing our own TNR project, we come across animals that we just cannot put back in the streets, you know, the kittens and friendly cats that won't survive otherwise. But we cannot handle any public intake of animals.
Right, so the only...
You don't have a shelter to do that type of work.
Right, so the things in your own homes are just the ones that you have trapped, that you are looking forward to either fostering or adopting out, and they're just sort of in a holding pattern for that purpose.
Exactly, that's correct.
Gotcha. So tell us a little bit about, because it's still, even with that, there's funds and things necessary to do their efforts. So tell us a little bit about this yard sale fundraiser coming up this Saturday.
Okay, well, this is one of our major fundraisers of the year. We are a nonprofit 501c3 organization, so we do count on the community for all of our funding. We don't get any state or federal funding. So a lot of these people within the community have donated wonderful items that we can sell at our yard sale to help raise funds for our TNR fund, which is also our spay and neuter fund, which helps us to help all the residents that can't afford to get their animals fixed, to help cover some of their costs. But our yard sale has some really wonderful items, from jewelry to household items to furniture, exercise equipment, artwork, just everything. I mean, we have got a tremendous response from the community of donated items. And it's going to be this Saturday from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. right at 203 South Falkenberg Avenue, which is right by Hillsborough Animal Services.
Right, that's in Brandon specifically. I guess we should let people know.
That's correct. That's Brandon.
Right.
And if you could come on out and support our efforts and buy some wonderful items, we would greatly appreciate it, and we would love to meet you.
Well, that's so great. And again, yeah, I mean, it's a lot of great work you're doing, and as you noted, to you know, to spay and neuter all those cats that you are bringing in. You know, that's expensive part of the operation, and so I got to believe this yard sale fundraiser is going to really help defray a lot of those costs. So again, that's this Saturday, April 30th. Good long day. So whatever you got planned, you certainly could get time to get over there between 7 a.m. and 5 p.m. Looks like specifically to the Sunoco Tampa office building at 203 South Falkenberg Road in Brandon. And if you're doing a map blast or a Google map thing, it's 33619 is the zip code. But again, it's a few blocks from Hillsborough County Animal Services. So also, Linda, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think you guys have a sort of a dedicated website, but if I'm wrong, please let me know what it is. Otherwise, I believe if people go to petfinders.com and search for Countless Cats Rescue, sort of a web page comes up that way. Is that correct?
That's correct. But you could also go directly, instead of going through the main Pet Finder website, you can go directly to www.countlesscatsrescue.com. Petfinder.com.
Oh, okay. I in searching for it, I hadn't found it that way, so I'm glad to know that. So, Well, great. Well, thank you very much, Linda, for joining us today. Thanks for all the great work you're doing for all these cats that otherwise, would have a tough life, and it sounds like you're giving them a new lease on life, and a great way to hopefully find homes and get off the streets and get off those colonies, et cetera. So thank you again for all your work, and we'll hope that people again turn up this Saturday at the yard sale fundraiser at, one more time, 203 South Falkenberg Road, Brandon, Florida, 33619. It's the Sunoco Tampa office building, and they're there pretty much all day, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Linda, thanks again.
Well, thank you, Duncan. I appreciate the time you've given me to spread the word about our yard sale, and we hope to have a great turnout. Thanks, and come on out and support us.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks again, Linda. Bye-bye now.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. We have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. We'll be back next Wednesday, May 4th, when our guest will be Wayne Pacelli, the president and CEO of the Humane Society of the United States, the country's largest animal protection organization with upwards of 11 million members. He's written a new book, The Bond, Our Kinship with Animals, Our Call to Defend Them. So we'll be discussing that. And the interview will be live. So I suspect some folks may want to call in and ask him about Michael Vick, probably one of the more polarizing animal issues in recent years. And may also want to ask about their steady stream of donation requests and how those monies are used and more. Things that come up on this show a lot, even when we're not talking about the Humane Society or anything directly related, those things seem to come up. So anyway, that's next Wednesday, May 4th, on Talking Animals right here on WMNF at 11 a.m. with Wayne Pacelli, the president and CEO of the Humane Society of the United States. And later that weekend, he's got a couple of book signings, and we'll have the specifics of those for you next week as well. So I hope you'll join me then. I also hope you'll visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals shows. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. Talking Animals broadcast outreach consultant is Libby McKenna. My thanks to her. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Stay tuned for the fabulous Scott Elliott with the All Souls version of It's the Music, airing next from noon to 3. We're closing out today's show, as always, with an animal tune. This one performed by Loris Vidal. Huge favorite of mine and such a regular presence when I was hosting the Wednesday Sonic Detour. He was practically getting his mail here. He was part of the lineup for the Talking Animals Festival, doing a great version of Taj Mahal's Queen Bee. And he'll be performing at WMNF's 30th Tropical Heat Wave, May 14th, in and around Ybor. So for all those reasons, let's hear him now. It's Loris Vidal with his version of Honeybee. Taking us right up to the NPR News, and then Scott Elliott and his great, great show right here on WMNF Tampa. See you next week, Wednesday, 11 a.m., Talking Animals.
Sweeter than a honeybee, oh, my baby been a sweet on me.
sweeter than the honeybee. Oh, she's my queen bee. Oh, oh, oh. She loves me to my soul. Ah, oh, she rocked to my soul, my baby, baby, baby. She loved me to my soul. Oh, she rocked me to my soul. Well, baby, won't you come by me? I hope you'll agree. Baby, won't you come by me? I know you'll agree, 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 agree. Oh, she loved me to my soul. Oh, she loved me to my soul. Oh, she rocked me to my soul. Mm-hmm, to my soul. Well, she's a strutter, she can shake his son. She'll dance and she'll have the fun. She's a strutter, she can shake his son. Oh, she'll dance and having fun. Baby, 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 baby. She loved me to my soul. She rocked me to my soul. She loved me to my soul. To my soul. Songs were made for lovers. Lovers and lovers and lovers and lovers and love. Lovers and lovers and lovers and lovers and love. Lovers and lovers and lovers and lovers and love. Lovers and lovers and lovers. Sweeter than a honeybee. Oh, my baby, been sweet on me. Sweeter than a honeybee. Oh, she's my queen bee. Oh, she rocked me to my soul. To my soul, she rocked me to my soul, oh, to my soul.